Today's episode is sponsored by Heart of Yamala, with high-quality personal care products, like their popular cocoa butter with baobab oil, cocoa butter without wax, and a scent that includes notes of chocolate, vanilla, amber, fruit, and musk. Go to heartofyamala.com to get yours today. That's HEARTOFYEMALLA.com. In the previous episode, David C. Driscoll, Part 1, we opened with a description of his 1956 work titled Behold Thy Son. This week, I want to introduce an image you might find while you're daydreaming. Imagine being inside a building, enveloped by your own thoughts, and then you see them. Pine trees, right in front of you this whole time. The work I'm talking about is Driscoll's painting titled Pines, 1973. This piece can be found at Green Hut Galleries in Portland, Maine. This is the Whole Art Nebula, where we explore the path less traveled, uncovering the undermined treasures in art and the stories, the history of Black artists. April 1966. David Driscoll was invited to be a speaker at the Fine Arts Festival at Fisk University in Tennessee. When he got there, he met with Harlem Renaissance painter and illustrator Aaron Douglas, who founded Fisk's art department in the 1930s. Douglas was retiring that year and tried to convince Driscoll to take his place, but Driscoll had plans at Howard. However, when Douglas took Driscoll to the Carl Van Vechten Gallery at Fisk, and he saw that the works in the Alfred Stieglitz collection hadn't been conserved properly and lacked a system in place to do so, Driscoll thought, "Oh my God, this is terrible." Even Douglas admitted that there wasn't a real professional atmosphere centered on the paintings. The next day, the interim president met with Driscoll to make a case for him to come to Fisk. Again, Driscoll stated he wasn't ready to leave Howard. The acting president presented a contract that offered Driscoll twice as much as what he made at Howard and told him to go home and just think about it. Driscoll did just that. He went home, talked it over with his wife and his aunt and even with Herring, who wasn't all that jazzed about Fisk. But he wasn't jazzed about any place, not even with Howard, who he felt pushed him out against his will. Driscoll took Herring's advice with a grain of salt. Fisk didn't have an art facility, a room here and there, but nothing consolidated and identifiable as its own section. And there was no running water in those rooms. After consideration, Driscoll decided to find out how serious Fisk was. So he wrote a proposal outlining the conditions under which he'd consider coming. In this proposal, he pointed out that some of the vacant houses on campus could probably be renovated, and he would want one to use as studios for teaching things like ceramics, printmaking, and painting. A letter was written back by the interim president inviting Driscoll to come back to Fisk to discuss these things and promise he could have everything that he had asked for. When he went back, he also said he needed a new kiln. They agreed. When he said he'd like a budget to bring visiting artists, they agreed. Then Driscoll went back home to discuss it again with his family and friends. In the fall of 1966, he began teaching at Fisk. During all of this, Driscoll is still working on his art, though his scholarly accomplishments were center stage. He said that from the late 1960s to the 1970s, he began creating works that were either influenced by African masks or showed a relationship to them. One example is his work titled Dancing Angel, created in 1974, a mixed media work now in the Smithsonian Collection. At Fisk, Driscoll organized a comprehensive show featuring the work of Aaron Douglas, William T. Williams, and Ellis Wilson. He also organized several other major exhibitions, including Amistad II in 1975, which traveled to 20 states. He also organized a show called African American Art, An Inside View, in 1976, and curated the national show, Two Centuries of Black American Art, which opened at LACMA, the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, in 1976, which was the largest attended exhibition the museum ever had at that time, with 80,000 visitors. Before the exhibition decision was made at LACMA, Driscoll had to present his proposal to the board for what the museum was establishing as a bicentennial exhibition. After his presentation, one of the board members said that they were Jewish, but would not be comfortable doing a bicentennial exhibition which emphasized Jewish artists as a bicentennial project, and wondered why Driscoll felt like this was something LACMA should be doing. Driscoll told her that he wasn't doing this exhibition for Black people. This exhibition was for everyone. He made the argument that it just so happened that white Americans have little or no knowledge about what Black Americans had done in visual arts. This was an educational process for everybody, especially a major education for the majority culture. The project was given to Driscoll. With the exhibition titled Two Centuries of Black American Art, Driscoll got into a passionate exchange with New York Times art critic Hilton Kramer, who, after seeing the exhibition, wrote, "Is it black art or is it social history?" Driscoll's response to the question was that all art is social history because it's made by human beings and has a role in history. So when Driscoll appeared on the Today Show in the summer of 1977, and journalist reporter Tom Brokaw asked for a response regarding Hilton Kramer's question of the need to distinguish between art and black art, Driscoll responded, "Hilton Kramer? What does he know about black art?" Kramer's response? A verbose article putting the show down and contradicting himself in the process. Driscoll's peers didn't care what Kramer said. They were just happy that his name was in the New York Times. When art historian Sam Hunter went to see the show, he was impressed with it and felt a bit derelict in viewing the whole of American art and planned to write about it. The product was the textbook titled American Art of the 20th Century, where he dedicated 12 pages to two centuries of Black American art. Kramer lost his mind when he found out and again responded in the New York Times. I guess people today would use Twitter, right? Why does Sam Hunter have to validate David Driscoll in separating the arts and keeping this thing going about black art? But then everyone wanted to know, who is David Driscoll? Driscoll started getting calls, people wanting to engage him in conversation, requests for lectures, and interviews, and finally a call from CBS wanting him to do an hour special in their cultural series titled Hidden Heritage, an hour special about African American art. In 1976, while the Two Centuries exhibition was going on, one of Driscoll's associates, Robert Corrigan, who was a senior academic administrator at the University of Maryland, College Park, invited Driscoll to come out and lecture. but when he got there, was invited to stay and teach. The exhibition kept him busy, so he had to decline. But after a lot of reflection, once he had returned to Fisk, he took a chance and made a leap in 1977.
Grassroots organizations are the backbone of communities, and it's one of the many reasons I'm a board member of the Green Foundation. The foundation provides community health education through outreach and navigation to help individuals and families access quality health care in California. For more information or to make a donation, go to thegreenfoundation.net.
It was New York, 1980. And David Driscoll had his first solo show where he exhibited paintings, collages, and other works. A lot of Driscoll's work looked like it could have been created by the celebrated artist Romare Bearden, who happened to attend the show. Romy, as they called him, pulled Driscoll aside and said that while he was surprised and appreciative to be influential in Driscoll's work, he firmly encouraged Driscoll to continue in collage, but to find his own voice with it. He walked Driscoll over to one of his works in which Driscoll had used torn paper in his work. Romy said to him, "That's your voice in collage." After this, Driscoll took up the challenge of using torn paper in his collages more often, along with fabric on canvas, creating collages in a completely new way for him. His work has largely reflected his trips to Africa, his religious upbringing and standing, and his connection with nature. An example of this is in his 1996 painting titled Echoes, Let the Church Roll On. As the title suggests, in the work is a building most people would assume is a small wooden church because of the adjacent bell tower. In the sky above the church is a dark-skinned angel hovering horizontally, eyes closed. A little like something you'd find in a Marc Chagall painting. Driscoll said this work was inspired by his father's sermons, his childhood memories. He has said that it was spirituality, and not necessarily that which is associated with religion, that taught him to see the beauty in all things. Driscoll had extensively curated art for the private collection of Bill and Camille Cosby, and had also done some curating for Oprah Winfrey. He retired from the University of Maryland in 1998, and in 2001, the university named a center in his honor. It's kind of a mouthful. It's the David C. Driscoll Center for the Study of Visual Arts and Culture of African Americans and the Diaspora. It is where the Driscoll Archive is located. In 2006, Julie L. McGee published a book titled David C. Driscoll, Artist and Scholar. Just as the title suggests, the book details his life and his work. At the age of 88, Driscoll contracted the coronavirus and died from complications of the virus on April 1st, 2020 in a Washington, D.C. hospital. If you'd like to see his work in person, the High Museum of Art in Atlanta, Georgia is exhibiting Driscoll's work from February 6th to May 9th, 2021. The exhibition is titled David Driscoll, Icons of Nature and History. Also, I just heard that HBO will have a documentary out in a couple days covering one of his exhibitions, the one that got so much press in the New York Times, that was Two Centuries of Black American Art. So, of course, I will be watching that and probably next time commenting on it. It is called Black Art in the Absence of Light, and it premieres February 9th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check it out with me. This episode was researched and produced by me, Kobina Wright. The theme music was created by Ade. To see images from this episode, go to our website at thewholeartnebula.com. You can also visit us on Instagram at thewholeartnebula. And if you like this episode, I'd be so happy if you left a 5-star review. This is the Whole Art Nebula.